The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Mastermind, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Max Radio. Trust you had a good Easter. The weather was kind of up and down, but Easter Sunday was lovely, wasn't it? So I hope you did lots of what you wanted to do over the weekend. Here we are now on the downhill slope. 4 weeks next Monday, it's early May bank holiday. 7 weeks next Monday is the spring bank holiday. TT starts, so that means 7 weeks this Friday. It's the pre-TT at the lab. Soon be here, won't it? House Keys Committee makes 14 conclusions on the proposed legislation to assisted dying, and Dr. Allenson says there's still a long way to go before assisted dying could be introduced in the Isle of Man. Alex Allenson's assisted dying bill has now been through a House of Keys Committee chaired by Douglas North MHK David Ashford. And it followed a political vote which demonstrated support for an assisted dying bill, something that's followed years of campaigning. Well, it's a contentious bill. It does divide opinion. And if you have one, by all means, do get in touch. Text, email, call and WhatsApp on that or anything else today. And Wilf's with us. Hi, Wilf.
Hiya. I haven't been on for a while. I was hoping for the... I'm waiting for some good news on South Beach, but I'm afraid I've had a lot of bad news now.
What's happened? So,
well, I've been on to MacDonald, who is in charge of harbours. I've been on to Doc Allenson to try and get this sorted out. I've been on to Tim Krukol. He can't do anything. DEFA, a while ago when we had a meeting and DEFA was there, they said that they couldn't stop us cleaning the beach, but now they've changed their mind and told us we got to leave the rubbish for the birds and the bats to get the flies from it. So the people have got to sit on all this rubbish now. We're not allowed to clean the beach. We're not allowed to fix our raft because that's now gone to health and safety, so the kids haven't got that either. In case it might fall on somebody, which is a lot of tripe. They decided not to buy a new rubber raft because that might get broken up on our beach because it's been broken up on Douglas beaches and what have you.
So when you say you're not allowed to fetch the rubbish from South, I mean, there's only bits and bobs of litter, but there's organic stuff there. When I was there, there was a log on the beach, and of course there's lots of wood. So is nobody allowed to get that wood off the beach?
I think they're allowed to take it, but who's going to take that off? Nobody wants it. Nobody's got a fire much these days.
Well, I'm not saying you should, Wilf, but could anybody build a bonfire of it on the beach? Is that against the law?
You'd have to get permission from the commissioners. Now, you've got my permission, but the rest of them, I don't know. I can't talk for the rest of them. You can't blame them now for not cleaning the beach, although we pay money every year to the government for that piece of beach, and it's our responsibility to clean it, and now they told us we can't clean it. Well, let's see, what have I got here? I've got bits of things. The raft. I paid for the timber for the raft, along with Save the Bay people. They helped out. The commissioners built the raft. Twice it's been smashed up. Then Gary Walker rebuilt it for us for free. The last time it's been built, it's on four big legs. And either one or two of the legs was broken. And I've produced a couple more legs for it. And I was wondering why they never put on. And now I've been told that they're not going to fix it because health and safety has jumped in now. And it might go on somebody's foot or something, which is a lot of nonsense.
So tell me, why is the Harbours Division of DOI, why have they got jurisdiction on South Beach? Because it's not inside the harbour.
They, I believe, from way back, they have jurisdiction from lighthouse to lighthouse, Point of Air to Mackle Lighthouse, the whole bay, they have jurisdiction over. I think they can actually stop a boat going out if they think it's a dangerous boat or whatever. They can stop it going to sea. That's what I believe, and I think I might be right.
Right.
Anyway, it's not very good news. We're not allowed to clean it.
We're basically back where we were.
Yes, yes. And that's building up now. If they leave it alone, it will build up and go over top of the wall eventually.
Well, at the moment, there are parts of South Beach that are above the level of the promenade, aren't there? Behind that wall, it's above the level of the promenade, so it's going to build up and up and up.
Yes, that's right, yeah. That's why we've got the original old slip for the lifeboat is the one with the planks on to keep the sand and the stones from going onto the promenade. That's why it was put there. But it actually, it's probably about 50 yards long if it was cleared off. And the height of the main slip, I've got photographs right tight in against the wall, is higher than a man's head. And as it is now, you can sit on that now and put your feet on the sand.
Yeah.
It's built up that much. But I had it all arranged for fellas to come down and take the whole top off, drop it by about a couple of foot or so, like they did a couple of years ago. And they're not allowed to touch it now. It's got to be left the way it is. Now, we've been told by somebody who thinks they know, but they don't know, that offshore wind, which that's what we have, is westerly, southwesterly, is our offshore wind. That when it blows hard, it's going to take all that away and go back out to sea. Well, that's nonsense, because that particular bit of the beach is sheltered by the buildings behind it and the prom wall, and that's the dirtiest bit off South Ramsey Beach. And there's no wind takes anything from there. It just passes the southerly wind and the easterly wind fetches stuff in. There's no other wind affects that corner. It can't. It's sheltered from all other winds. It'll never shift by itself. It's total nonsense. Or let's say total rubbish. How will that do?
Yeah. And just refresh my memory, Wilf. When I was there, there were some those pleasure yachts. Those little dinghies were on the walkway. Are they blocking the walkway, or are they allowed to be there?
Well, I don't know. Are they actually allowed to be there? But they put them there anyway. They don't take any notice of anybody. They even leave their. The quad sometimes on the beach and the trailers on the beach and tell people to get out of the way. We're having a race today. And it's not their beach, but they seem to have taken it over. But the thing is, if there's an accident out on that stone pier, the ambulance cannot get past them yachts to get out to see to anybody. But the thing is, you can take a vehicle out there when it is clear, because it's not long since them two lighthouses on both piers were refurbished, taken down, taken to bits and refurbished. And there were scaffold wagons out there with scaffold all around the actual tower. So you can take a few. I've been out dozens of times in my younger day in a van to go fishing. But you can't get an ambulance out there now. You'd have to go out there with a gurney, as they call it, on wheels, a run out there if anybody got hurt. So they're just in the way.
That's interesting. It's interesting, as you say, that health and safety will prevent a swimming raft being put out there, but yet the way is blocked if any emergency vehicle wanted to get out there.
You've got it spot on, Andy.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Wilf.
Okay.
All right. Good to hear from you. Thanks for that today. We'll wait and watch and see what happens to Ramsey South Beach. And I've just been checking, by the way, The Harbours Division of Infrastructure is responsible for the ownership of the foreshores around the Isle of Man. So harbours do control, or they've got ownership of the foreshores up to high water mark, except Douglas Beach, which is owned by the Borough of Douglas, or Douglas City Council as it is now. So the Harbours Division's got three sections: operations, Coast Guard and admin. And they provide operation and maintenance of the eight statutory harbours. They do harbours legislation. The Coast Guard service, of course, which is unique in the British Isles in that infrastructure's got responsibility for the Coast Guard and also owns the foreshores up to the high watermark and the territorial seabed up to 12 miles. David's on now. Hi, David.
Hi, Daddy. Just want to talk about Glenside as we all know it. And the new modern name is Summerhill Views. And the amazing issue that's come out now, that it's $2.3 million over budget.
$15 million total. £15 million.
Yeah, it's a staggering amount of money when you look at it. It's a fine building. I've just skied from the outside, and I've had a look at it now and again when you go past there. And I'm just wondering, why wasn't that issue brought up when Timbald asked for extra money for education, the health service and stuff like that? Why wasn't it brought up then? And that was a few months ago. Because the health service, the extra one was something like $6 million. So why wasn't the 2.3 added into it?
And well, wonder.
The issue I've got, Andy, is now Mr. Watterson, who's the Speaker of the House of Keys, needs to call the Public Accounts Committee to order and investigate it. And we need some resolve on what's happened. Like I said to you in the past, who's authorised the expenditure, who was looking after the expenditure, and it's got to be Treasury in conjunction with the Health Service. I wonder whether it was the Minister himself or was it the Board. Well, that'll be an interesting. Who was in charge of it, the development as such?
Well, they say that the original budget was $12.5 million, which seems a lot anyway. $12.5 million. It's now gone up to $14.9 million, basically $15 million. So, yeah. And what they say is increased construction costs, regulatory and best practice guidelines which have changed, and the failure of a key product component. Now, what they're not saying what the key product component was, whether it was bricks or mortar or whatever it was, but something has gone up.
Well, we need an answer. I mean, it's simple just to say it's gone up by money, but the taxpayer and the people of the Isle need to know what's actually gone on. And why is it not opened? What's happened to the contract for running it? Where we are on those? Those are sort of questions that members of Timbald should be asking. And the other thing really is why is the hub now for having the injections going to be based there? And why is it open for that and not open for the residents who want to move from Retina Bay?
As you say, I've driven past it dozens of times, as have you, and it looks gorgeous. It's very high quality, and I'm sure everybody will be well cared for when they get there. But that shouldn't take away from the fact that it's shot up in price. They can say COVID or inflation or what have you, but surely that should have been baked into this project.
Yeah, and we should have more details, and that's the question I'm throwing out there to people, because at the end of the day, the taxpayers pick it up, the bill, but it's a great facility, it'll be great on the asset list for the Isle of Man government, and people want to get in there. So when are all these things going to happen? And when is the Public Accounts Committee going to step in and say, look, we need to look at this and give the public an answer?
Okay.
All right, mate.
Go ahead. Thanks for that. Good to hear from you. It's 21 minutes past 12. This is £2.3 million, which is being sought to pay for the new care home. It's gone over budget. DHSC is going to ask Timbald to approve more money for Summerhill View, as David said, the old Glenside at the top of Victoria Road on the corner by the TT course. Unlike originally planned, it was revealed that Manx Care now is looking at employing an independent provider to run the facility because they can't meet or think they can't meet the staffing requirements. 60 beds, associated daycare centre. It's going to replace Rietna Bay, Albert Terrace, which is deemed no longer fit for purpose. So originally, £12.557 million agreed in December 2023. And in December last year, the new cost forecast, more than £14 million was outlined. Now it's gone to £14,905,000. So it's gone up nearly a million in 4 months. Well, we wait to hear, and it would be nice to know when it's actually going to open, would you say? Paul's on now. Hi, Paul.
Hello there, Andy. I was calling in about the committee report on assisted dying.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed, really. I mean, but by way of background, back in November, I put in Freedom of Information requests to the DHSC and Manx Care, saying, have you carried out a risk and impact assessment? And the answers eventually came back, no, they haven't. Manx Care hadn't. At all, and the DHSC had some cost assessments but hadn't looked at risks. Now, I was really hoping that the committee would follow what I think is just normal good business practice. If you're looking at a major change in your policies or a major project, you carry out a risk and impact assessment. What the committee did, as far as I can make out, is they set their scope as being to look at the bill. So they look at the bill and its intended effects, but what they haven't done is they haven't looked at unintended effects and side effects. So, for example, they had a group of medics write to them and express concern about impact on ability to recruit. And you've just had a news article about difficulties recruiting for a care home. The medics are saying you could well find it more difficult to recruit doctors and nurses to the Isle of Man if you've got this in place. That's evidently been considered by the committees out of scope because they haven't addressed it. So it seems to me that the Manx government has a problem in this area, and for all I know, maybe in other areas, of just not following normal good practice of having a proper risk and impact assessment.
Trouble is, Paul, like with all unintended side effects, nobody knows what they're going to be until they happen. And then hindsight's 20/20 vision. So, I mean, how would you specify what you think would be an unintended side effect?
Well, I think the medics have pointed out potential difficulties in recruiting. That's an unintended side effect, but it is one that's foreseeable. A lot of people have commented on potentially undermining the suicide prevention strategy. There's potentially vulnerable people being pushed towards that direction, and the committee has addressed that issue and acknowledged that there is a need there for a great deal more training and awareness training. Some side effects are unpredictable, but just because they're outside the immediate scope doesn't mean that none are predictable.
What's your view of the legislation?
Very sceptical. I mean, I guess partly from personal experience, because I did have an aged relative who I think who often talked about her feelings of redundancy, and I think if her family had had a different attitude, if this legislation was in place, would have been open to being talked into looking for a way out. Happily, her family were very supportive of her. And, you know, we're not after her money. But I do worry about vulnerable elderly people.
And also, while you've been talking, I've had a note in from Tina in Onchan who just said, agree with Paul, but and also the possibility of secondary legislation coming in. They're saying that it's going to be watertight, almost bombproof, if it comes in. But the thought of secondary legislation and also the Equality Act, you know, people quoting the Equality Act.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way that, you know, the Canadian experience went. I mean, you've had on Manx Radio a speaker from Canada who's talked about how once it's there, if you've said that it's available to people who are in serious pain because they're terminally ill, you've then got people who've got chronic pain from a condition that will not be fatal. And then you've got people who've got severe mental distress, and eventually you find that whatever you write in the legislation, the courts have a duty to interpret it once it's legislation. That's it's for the courts to interpret, and the courts are under obligations to have regard to equality legislation. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I do fear it will snowball.
And also, I mean, the courts have a duty to be objective when the majority of opinion is going to be subjective.
Yeah. I mean, I think it must be awful for people who are in that position. I've lost relatives, but happily they have not been in situations. They've been in situations where palliative care meant that they were not, suffering unbearable pain. And I really do understand and have a lot of sympathy for the people who are arguing for it, for terminally ill people who are in a lot of pain. I can really see why they are pushing for their intended objective, but I just think the unintended consequences could be truly awful.
Let me ask you a straight question, Paul, and feel free not to answer it. Do you think this law will actually come forth? Do you think that's going to go on the statute book here?
I think it probably will, but I think it shouldn't. I just can see... I can understand that it's trying to help a small number of people, but I fear that it will harm at least an equal number of people.
Well-intended but misguided.
Yes. I mean, I don't doubt the sincerity or genuine belief of the proposer of the bill and the rest of the supporters of the bill, that they are really trying to help people who are dying in pain and their relatives. And I'm sure that the vast majority of people who are sceptical about this bill would say the same. You know, it must be a nightmare situation for those people. But it's also a nightmare for the families of people who are victims of who suicide.
Mm, okay.
And if this does anything that undermines our suicide prevention strategy, other families will be suffering as a result. I really worry about the unintended consequences, and that's why I think it needs a thorough look at the risk and impact, a rounded look at the downside that is prepared to face up to those possible adverse consequences and consider how can they be mitigated? Is it a price that actually is just too great?
Okay, well, I appreciate your call today, Paul. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Andy.
Okay,
all the best
to you. It's 12:30 on Manx Radio. There's a rumour, says Helen on 127, that Lord Street flats are being sold to a private developer. Have we heard anything about this? The site surely belongs to Douglas ratepayers via the social housing provision, so can't be sold off, says Helen. Something we'll put then to Douglas Council. You may remember last week, seems ages ago, but last Thursday, Douglas Central MHKs, Anne Corlett and Chris Thomas were on, and they talked a lot about housing provision, not least about the Manx Development Corporation and the new village that's proposed between Kensington Road and Domain Road in Douglas and the old nurse's home. But if you want to follow up on anything that Anne and Chris had to say, then by all means get in touch. Thanks to John, just says, listen to one who knows what he's talking about. That's Wilf, John on 557. Peel Beach had just had sand moved to the north, so why can't Ramsey do the same, says Chris B. Again, we'll find out how much sand was moved from Peel Beach from south to north. Wilf says Fran is correct with the comments about South Beach. It's a mess, along with the rest of the town. Surely. The Murrocks, great. The whole of Parliament Street and the Quayside have got lots of litter, an unkempt mess. So I wonder if the small boat owners and racing dinghies are paying their harbour dues or launching fees. The boat owners in the inner harbour have to pay these charges. But yes, there are dinghies on the walkway on South Beach. There's no point, says G on 313, in the PAC, the Public Accounts Committee, reviewing the spending of $15 million at Summerhill View, as nobody will pay for the mistakes. And here's Richard, who says, Dick says, I don't want to rain on the Manx Wildlife Trust parade, as they're doing good work, but the 3,000 tonnes of carbon they say planting trees will save over 50 years really needs to be put in perspective. The Woodland Trust on the Isle of Man say there's 300,000 ash dead or dying on an island full of carbon at an average of 3.5 million tonnes. That's a million tonnes of carbon being released in the atmosphere within 10 years because of dead ash trees. So 3,000 tonnes in 50 years won't even scratch the surface. But government and DEFA are saying nothing about the ash dieback on the Isle of Man. People really need to hear the scale of the disaster, as we need a million trees, Dick, planting to get anywhere near what will cover the extra carbon in just 10 years from ash dieback before we even think of being carbon neutral. Claire Barber's been on, the Environment Minister. She's been on and talked about ash dieback. It really is a losing battle. But they are trying, I think. She did mention last time there's been some genetic engineering and modification with ash, that they're getting some ash that are resistant. So we keep our fingers crossed. But a good point. Thanks for that, Dick. Good to hear from you. With the assisted dying bill, will the person or their family be charged a fee for this service? Let's be honest. If they can charge you to have a Ring doorbell, they could charge for this, says Fran. That's an interesting point, isn't it? Eric's on now. Hi, Eric.
Hello, Andy.
What's on your mind, Eric?
It's about what Wilf was talking about the Ramsey Beach.
Yeah.
Now, I'm an ex-commissioner from Peel, and as far as I can remember, he's quite right. You're quite right about the beach being owned up to the mean high water mark by the Harbours Division. But I, from my memory, and I stand to be corrected on this, Peel commissioners paid a peppercorn rent to the Isle of Man government and had control of the beach, so they could do more or less what they liked as well.
Oh, I see. So, and would they bring in an outside contractor to move the sand? They've not got diggers themselves,
have they? We used to have it in our budget every year for beach cleaning.
Oh, really?
And I think they're doing it, as far as I know, they're doing it at the moment.
So it's Peel commissioners.
If they own up to the mean high water mark, who owns the other bit?
Yes. That's interesting, isn't it?
Well, it is an interesting point. I have an idea, and again, I stand to be corrected, but I have an idea that it's vested in the Crown.
Ah.
Maybe worth checking up on that. But as far as the Peel commissioners were concerned, we always paid a peppercorn rent, and we had control of the beach, and we did more or less what we liked. We make our own bylaws with regards to dogs fouled in the beach.
Oh, is that so? Well, and how long ago was that, Eric?
Well, I was in the 1990s.
That's it. Well, obviously, they're still at it. They're still at it if they're moving sand now.
As far as I know, I've heard they're moving sand. Or it'll be imminent anyway.
Okay, all right.
But they push it down towards the sea, and, of course, the sea takes it away. And, of course, the beach is always kept clean. Now, so Wilf might like to have a look at that and see what the score is, but I understand that that's what Peel did, commissioners did. They paid a peppercorn rent and they had control of the beach.
Well, Peel Beach is known for being tidy, and the litter goes quite quickly, doesn't it?
That's right, and the sand always comes back, which is a good thing in a way, but they always keep it under control so it doesn't get out of hand.
Okay, all right, thanks for that, Eric. Good to hear from you.
Just thought I would mention it and see if Will would like to check it up and find out. And I do stand to be corrected, but I think I'm right.
Okay, appreciate that. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. Thank you, Andy.
All right, it's 24 minutes before one. I would have thought, says David, that the extra money would have been voted by Tynwald before it's been spent. So where's the money come from to complete Summerhill View? And what's the point of asking Tynwald if they can approve it as their hands have already been tied, says David. This is the overspend on Summerhill View, the old Glen side, which, as I say, next time you're around, take a look, have a wander along Glen Crutchery Road. It's lovely. Very, very high spec from the outside. Looks lovely. I would expect there to be a dedicated clinic for assisted dying with trained staff, so GPs wouldn't be expected to participate in the final process, says Sue. Some older people don't want to live a miserable existence. Sue's word, these are unable to do anything and no hope of improvement. I certainly don't, says Sue. Thanks for calling, Sue. Thanks for your message, Sue. Good to hear from you. This is Sue again, I think, on 768. Yes, it is Sue on 768. Records of people taking their own lives because they're ill with no hope of improvement are kept hush-hush, as suicide is still taboo. Now, you know this for a fact, Sue. I know people who have done this, so... Are those who are against assisted dying okay that vulnerable people have to resort to taking their own lives because there is no kinder option? Thanks for your point of view, Sue. It just goes to show there is no real black and white in this. And certainly it is such a subjective subject. I just wonder what your thoughts are on this. We have a few opinions that we canvass.
I would like everybody to have the choice of how they die and when they die. We know that there are lots of people for whom palliative care doesn't work, and we would like them to have the opportunity to have a dignified death of their choice at a time that they choose.
The rights for some person will make somebody else vulnerable, because you can't spot coercion and manipulation. And not only that, but we'll lose health care. The residency requirement is a year. That's going to bring loads of people over from the UK. If we go ahead of the UK, our services will collapse under the pressure. If we abolish the residency requirement, we'll become known as Death Island. So there's quite a few big issues with this bill.
There were some concerns that if the Isle of Man was to be one of the first jurisdictions in the British Isles to bring in assisted dying, whether people would move over here.
That's Alex Allinson, of course, who's proposing the bill, whose bill it is.
To make use of that provision. And that was certainly a concern from the Isle of Man Medical Society in terms of how that would affect their members, how it affects what happens in nobles and issues like that. So the committee looked at whether it would recommend increasing that residency from 12 months, which is fairly standard for lots of things, up to 5 years. Again, what the committee's done is different, because it's a bill committee, so it's going through each of the clauses. It hasn't made a recommendation. It's just made a conclusion, really, to provide members that extra bit of advice and scrutiny, so that when we go through the clauses stage, they'll have a little bit of basis for some of the debates that may come up in terms of amendments. Yes.
There he is, Dr. Alex Allinson. Well, this has been the committee chaired by David Ashford, the Douglas North MHK, who set up at the end of last year to review the clauses of the members' bill. The committee has gathered a range of evidence. They've had the First Deemster, Isle of Man Medical Society, MHK's Association of British Insurers, Royal College of Nursing Union, and the Isle of Man Insurance Association. 14 conclusions, including amendments to some of the proposed legislation to ensure assisted dying could be legal and safe as a choice for terminally ill ill people to go down the route, a recommendation that those applying for assisted death must have been resident on the island for 5 years. That's a change in the original requirement for a patient to be ordinarily resident for no less than one, which the committee found to be insufficient. In addition, a person's terminal illness must have a prognosis of 12 months rather than 6 months originally proposed, and the committee also suggests that there needs to be sufficient training and support made available to medical practitioners who indicate they're prepared to participate in the assisted dying pathway. Any thoughts?
The Loganair Easter sale is now on. Fly from the Isle of Man to Manchester, London Heathrow and London City Airport. Save up to 15% off over 1 million seats across the Loganair network. Book by 2nd April, travel from 26th April. Subject to availability, exclusions apply. Visit loganair.co.uk. Your journey, our joy.
Hey, June. I wanted to tell you about the Green Living Grant. Well, new Spectrum windows and doors are so energy efficient they qualify for the Green Living Grant, with funding available for up to 50% of the cost. I saved £5,725, but the application deadline closes at the end of June.
Don't delay. Contact Spectrum Windows today on 817777. T's and C's apply.
We interrupt this broadcast to inform all our listeners about the huge range of bathrooms and showers on display at Pacesetter. Yes, you all know that Pacesetter is known as the island's largest tile store, but I'm here to tell you that their bathroom displays are truly inspirational. Visit Pacesetter on Harris Terrace, where you'll discover a fabulous collection of stylish bathrooms. There's something to suit everyone, with design available. Pacesetter bathrooms and showers to show off about.
Step into Office World, the island's largest fully stocked stationery store, where there's over 5,000 items on display to take away. From pens, paper, inks and toners to general stationery, adhesives and batteries, you can get what you need right now from Office World. With all the big brands, including Pilot, Pentel, Sellotape, Duracell, Gorilla, Pucker Pads and more. Office World is conveniently located on Spring Valley Industrial Estate, with easy parking right outside the door. Office
World! Journey to a Dream, the podcast that takes you behind the handlebars of motorcycle racing's ultimate challenge, roads on the Isle of Man.
I didn't realise normal people could race motorbikes. I thought it was something on TV or for superheroes.
From the thrill of the speed to the allure of the island's mystique, join me, Beth Espy, as we unravel the passion that drives these riders to push the limits.
Childhood dream, you know, it's something I've always wanted from since being a kid.
Journey to a Dream, available now at manxradio.com or your usual podcast provider.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Messages galore in today. How do we know who's going to be as a Pat who WhatsApped in? How do we know who'll be monitoring the outside agency who may be running the new nursing home on Summer Hill? Checking training, communication, good practice are all up to the highest standard. I ask these questions because there have been some horrendous tales from the UK regarding outside agencies running this sort of establishment and arranging visas for staff who may not be qualified to do the job. Says Pat. Well, there is a track record of that. I think the Salisbury Street facility, although built by government, is run by Adorn as an outside agency, and it seems to be going okay. But we watch and wait, Pat. Sure as anything, though. It'll be more expensive. It's guaranteed to be, isn't it? Let me see. Here's a note also, just to say, won't the present staff move to the patients to the new home? So what is the holdup? Well, they're obviously Manx Care feel. Thanks for that. That's WhatsApp 075. Manx Care don't want to run it. Say they can't run it. They've got staff issues. So they're going to bring in an outside agency. Somebody else is going to be doing this. Thanks also to Steve. He drops a note in just to say, can we stop the misinformation and scaremongering regarding assisted dying? The guidelines are very specific that it's only for people who are terminally ill in the last few months of life. We're not Canada, so shouldn't be using that as a comparison. Those who don't support it can opt out, but they shouldn't be allowed to restrict other people's choice. Thanks for that. Oh, tonight, interesting show at 6 o'clock on Manx Radio. Manx on the Moon. We're looking at Christy De Haven talks to Chris Stott, the space expert, to find out about Manx connections to the recent moon landing and more. You may have watched with bated breath last month as an unmanned lunar lander nicknamed Odysseus, built by Intuitive Machines, successfully landed on the surface of the moon, the second commercial mission to be funded by NASA. And it turns out, of course, there was Manx representation on board. The spacecraft had equipment from six commercial customers on board, including a small data storage device from Lone Star Data Holdings, the US parent company of the island-based East Nua. Chris Stott, of course, is the company's founder and chair and CEO. So more tonight with that, 6 o'clock. Manx on the Moon, we're calling it. Tune in after the 6 o'clock news. Thanks also to, this is Scruffy Jeff, who dropped a note into me just to say, all this talk makes me very impatient for the Beer and Cider Festival. It's on the 11th of April, 11th to the 13th. That's what, a week on Friday, I think it is. The Isle of Man Camera 11th Beer and Cider Festival. Well, Scruffy Jeff, I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Here's a message in from Barbara who said, do we know yet whether anybody's had that pop-up shop with the leaky roof? We don't. But it would be nice to know who's going to be paying £7,000 plus VAT for the shop with the leaky roof. The old M&Co underneath St Thomas School. Surely it's going to be mended by them. Thanks also to Andy, who just says Manx Labour Party, the AGM May 25th, and they're going to be talking about constitutional reform. Nick Hawkes, surely distraction from the representatives in Timwell not getting economic advantages for working people, says this. The Manx Labour Party. Well, seems to be doing okay at the moment. Of course, they have a couple of representatives within Timwald. Joni Farragher and Sarah Maltby are in Timwald, but their AGM is on the 25th. Constitutional reform. Leads me on to a message that came in talking about MHKs and side projects, just saying, why are we concentrating on side projects like assisted dying and also the removal of the bishop's vote in Timwald when really we're supposed to be getting the island's economy back on track? Is this just distraction tactics? I saw something about the MUA smart meter top-up problems at Easter. Have you had one? Gee, do we have a costly mess coming down the tracks? Well, we did get anecdotal evidence about smart meters not quite working because of the mobile phone system. But I'll be honest with you, G313, not a lot lately. So if you've got a problem with a smart meter, apart from getting in touch with Manx Utilities, if you want to report it, then by all means. Not everybody who is suffering from terrible pain is terminally ill, but their life is little more than just existing. The option should be available to those people too, says 068. There was also Scruffy Jeff was a mistake, that being a cider festival. Should it have been Scrumpy Jeff? No, Scruffy Jeff, he was very adamant about that. Thanks also to, it was Belinda, who was talking about the thank you, Belinda. She was talking about the assisted dying and people who aren't terminally ill but suffer from chronic pain. In particular, Belinda was talking about chronic neuralgia, debilitating pain, and subsequent addiction to painkillers. How do we get around that? I'm not suggesting there's a link between addiction to painkillers and chronic pain and the assisted dying bill. But could some people make the connection? And Jenny's on now. Hi, Jenny.
Hi. I just wanted to say a big thank you to Manx Radio, who kindly came and interviewed myself Rachel Evans and Paul Creamer and John Cashin from the Ballykilferrick Methodist Chapel. We launched a campaign to try and save the building, to raise money, raise funds. And I'd just like to say a very big thank you to everybody who's donated so far. It's been absolutely tremendous. We have a GoFundMe page. Nearly £3,000 has so far been raised to make the building watertight and to repair the floor that had collapsed. So we can now use the schoolroom again, because that was the issue. It couldn't be used because of the floor. And on Saturday, the 6th, this coming Saturday, we have an open day from 11 o'clock till 1 o'clock. There will be parking off-site that will be signposted on hard standing, so people don't have to park in the road. If anybody would like to come along and see where their money is being spent and have a look round the chapel.
How much are you going to need in total?
Oh, now that's one of them how long is a piece of string questions. The remedial work to actually make the building watertight, we're kind of almost there. Once the building is watertight, and then, like I say, we can start to use the schoolroom for coffee mornings and those kinds of events, a community space, then we can raise some more money through that avenue. But the biggest work will be repairing the damage inside the actual chapel that the water ingress has already done. The floor collapsed inside the back of the chapel, and the wall has... it's not the gable end inside that's actually bulging, but the rendering that's on the gable end on the inside has a very big bulge in it, and that all needs to come off and be replaced. That will be the big job. So it's really just for people, if you want to come look at the chapel, see what work still needs to be done, how their money's been spent so far, we'd be very pleased to see everybody.
So it's 11 till 1 on Saturday, isn't it?
Saturday the 6th, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And £2, you're asking for £2 for donations and tea and coffee and what have you?
Well, no, not necessarily, just whatever, you know. Being that the Methodist Church, we're not actually allowed to ask for a certain amount, but all donations are very welcome. Even if you don't want to make a donation, you just fancy coming and having a look round at what is a beautiful piece of Victorian rural architecture. It celebrates its 175th birthday next year, so we're hoping to get the repairs done ready for its anniversary.
Okay, appreciate that. What and how does anybody find your GoFundMe page?
I think there was a link to it on the Manx Radio page. We also have a Facebook group, Ballykilferrick Methodist Chapel Facebook group, which you can find by searching for, and the details of the GoFundMe are on there. And also, thanks to Rachel, who is the brilliant fundraiser, she has now got a QR code, which makes me sound like I know what I'm talking about, and I'm not very technical, so that if people want to, there's a poster with the QR code up in the window, so if people wanted to just donate with their phones using that, that's possible too.
Okay, all right, appreciate that. Jenny, thanks for calling.
That's lovely, thank you so much.
Hello, this is Manx Olympic snowboard athlete Zoe Gillings-Bryer. I want to wish Manx Radio a very happy 60th birthday.
When the man in line's not on air, call Manx Radio to leave your opinion for broadcast on 682 631.
Kathy. Hi, Kathy.
Hiya. Wait a minute. Get me glasses. Hey, get your glasses on.
Put your glasses on, Kathy, then you can see what you're hearing.
Now then, okay. I am paying Onken District Commissioners rate demand, okay?
Yeah.
Which I do not disagree with, okay? But, you know, I'm paying £662.87, right?
Yeah.
And what am I paying all that for?
I think it's because you're living there.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, but it's not just about that, okay? I'm paying for stupid things, okay? Like grass. and I don't know. I don't know what I'm paying for. Can you tell me?
Well, I'm not an Onken ratepayer, you see. You should possibly pop along to one of those Onken commissioners' meetings and have a chat with them.
Listen, okay. You're too clever for me. Okay.
No, I think you're too clever for me.
No, I'm not. Okay, I have common sense. Okay? And I am paying for, apparently, grass... grass surges, okay? Where people can sit.
Yeah?
Yeah, people can sit and be happy.
Okay, all right. Thanks, Kathy. I don't know much, but I can't get to the bottom of what's happening in Onken Commissioners. But thank you, Kathy. Sadly, says Rich, I've been with parents who died terribly, but before a sister dying, nobody mentions the power of attorney for health and welfare. No doctor will be able to decide to end a life without the patient's consent. A legal power of attorney, also those who do want to choose to die, do they already have the do not resuscitate power or the doctor in place, as their agony is often prolonged without it being done? This is a big subject, and we won't get through it today, so maybe tomorrow on the open line on Man in Line. Thanks to Chris Quirk on the phone today. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. WINT